And welcome to this edition of Money Matters, your economic forum. My name is Mark Gunnenberg. Thanks for joining me again in 2021. Before we begin, remember the discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. The views expressed on today's show are my opinions only, and they do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. Money Matters is about money. As money does matter and matters of money affect us all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it or a little of it, it controls our country, our economy, our planet. And in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, it's about you. Today's show, number 320, Money Matters Economic Forum. And today's show I've entitled Enter Biden. And we used to air at noon right here in California, and about 66 stations pick it up nationwide and air it at a different time, and that's okay. So now we pre-record. We're down to 29 minutes to keep things simple and condensed, and so welcome. So what has been going on? Well, the Dow has broken 30,000 and touched 31,000, which was quite interesting. And, of course, Trump is going out the back door, and Biden is coming the front door with the inauguration, so we'll see how that happens. But there's an old saying in the investing world entitled, buy the rumor, sell the news. This, like other quips in the world of stocks, other sayings, things that we banter around the coffee pot in the office, this is by no means a precursor to what will happen, only what might happen. Buy the rumor, sell the news. The saying refers to the possibility that a stock will rise in price based on a rumor. And if the rumor becomes true and they post that rumor as news, it becomes fact, and the stock sells off. Hence the saying, buy the rumor, sell the news. For example, imagine a particular smartphone manufacturer who is rumored to have a blowout quarter in the upcoming earnings season. Rumored. People say, oh, they're going to have a great quarter. They're going to have a great quarter. The stock might increase as the rumor makes it around Wall Street and on public media. Then when the company posts the earnings, let's say it is indeed a blowout quarter. Surprising many an investor, however, the stock sells off on the news. So people bought the rumor, but sold the stock on the news. This would be a classic example of buy the rumor, sell the news. It doesn't always happen where good news is sold off, but it has happened more than you would think, and enough times it happens. So the actual saying, buy the rumor, sell the news, came to be. We can take this occurrence and extrapolate it to the general market. The question now becomes, can the current market rally, which has brought it to above 30,000 on the Dow for the first time ever, can it continue to set even higher highs? It's no surprise the market's new highs fly in the face of current economic conditions. Indeed, the economy, not many people argue this, but because of the COVID shutdowns, the economy has seldom been in worse shape. Meanwhile, since the third week of March 2020, remember that year? We don't want to, but I remember it. The markets have recorded historic gains to rise from a Dow low in March of 2020 of around 18,213 on the Dow to over 30,000. The markets obviously weren't looking at what was, because what was an economy shuttered by COVID. Indeed, it could be argued the market's meteoric rise was because investors were likely looking at what will be, not what was. When the market was looking forward to was a vaccine, it was also looking forward to humongous Federal Reserve spending, government spending, tremendous amounts of stimulus, and an eventual reopening of the world's economies. From week to week and from month to month, since the current environment was so bad with all the shutdowns, the hope of a world reopening and what was could turn into what would be, and it would bring enough good things to push the markets even higher. It's almost as if, at least in my opinion, The times of the shutdown were so bleak, the imagination of investors kept the registers ringing on Wall Street and therefore kept the stock market rising. Fast forward to today, and we could be looking at an extremely overstretched market. Indeed, 31,000 in the middle of a COVID shutdown for the last 8 months is a little bit bizarre, right? Some argue that this market is historically overbought on many levels. There are many indicators that saying it is very overbought. Not all. And by all means, it doesn't mean it will exclusively drop. At this time, though, it might be time to ask what more good news could come out. The vaccine is here, right? And the Fed has indeed spent trillions of dollars. Reopening is, albeit slow, reopening is happening and scheduled to happen more. And the vaccine is slowly making its way around the globe. It is only a matter of time before the world resumes at least some sense of normalcy, right? You agree with that? That said, as of now, I can only see one more piece of good news in our future. And the rumor of that is already out. That piece of good news is one more round of stimulus from the Biden administration. And it is in the works, and we already know it is. What this means, at least to me, is that the good news, possibly all of the good news, is already baked into the proverbial cake. I would ask, what other good news could there be? The market could be said to be as high as the good news that we know about is warranted. So I guess I should rephrase that and say the market could be said to be as high as the good news warrants, and it has nothing to look forward to after the stimulus check. In my opinion, with a market that has risen close to 60% off its lows in a mere 9 months from the COVID low in March to where it is today, it may be time for caution. If portfolios reflect market gains, those profits could be substantial, and protecting such profits could be time and order of the day. Protecting such profits should be the order of the day. Got to be careful. The regulators never like to let me say should. I always should say may. After all, it's better to miss a market top than ride a market back down in a severe correction, right? A perfect buy the rumor, sell the news event may be setting up with the announcement of the final stimulus program from Washington. That said, another saying comes to mind right now, and that saying goes something like this. Nobody ever went broke taking a profit. Ignore at your own peril. Do we know for a fact that with this last bit of good news, the last stimulus check announcement, which will probably come in the next couple of weeks from the Biden administration, do we think that the rumor is that it's coming, and it is, and there's a rumor for that, and with all the good news already out, could the announcement of the Biden stimulus check be sell the news? Could it be a sell the news moment? Don't know. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll take a short break, and we will be right back. And welcome back to this edition of Money Matters. My name is Mark Cooney-Burdy. You're listening to show 320, Enter Biden. So there's a tremendous amount of money going into the economy. And I'm not only talking about the money that goes into the American consumer, but all the other money that is implemented by the Federal Reserve to keep the economy going. So a government can manipulate an economy. And there are two types of what we call policy responses that it can use to address changes in the economy. They either will try to jerk it up forward. If it's slowing down, they'll try to speed it up. Or they'll try to slow it down if there's a lot of inflation. So it's kind of like a gas pedal. They'll push on it to make it go faster. And then they'll lift on it to make it go a little slower. Now, how do they do that? There are two types of policy response that a government can implement. And they are called fiscal and monetary. And they're different. is fiscal policy and monetary policy. Now, fiscal policy refers to the taxing and spending policies of the government. Taxing and spending. And that includes raising or lowering federal taxes or fees, usually implemented by the Internal Revenue Service or Treasury Department. Spending programs like improving infrastructure, stimulus programs to individuals and local governments and businesses, and other types of programs the government undertakes with permission from our representatives. That is fiscal policies. Fiscal policies are enacted by the government. They're usually voted on, and they are funded usually by the Treasury Department and overseen with cooperation from the Internal Revenue Service. Monetary policy differs from fiscal policy in many ways. Now, they kind of sound the same, but they are not. Monetary policy is undertaken almost exclusively by the quasi-government agency called the Federal Reserve Bank of the United States, also generically referred to as our central bank. Other governments in other countries have theirs. We have ours. Ours is called the Federal Reserve. It is run by a board of governors, headed up by a Federal Reserve chief, and only the Federal Reserve chief is appointed by the president, and the governors are not voted in by you or I, so they're not publicly elected. The Federal Reserve is a somewhat obscure agency of the federal government. Now, their monetary policy is carried out by the Federal Reserve, and it is direct manipulation of the U.S. dollar, direct manipulation of the U.S. dollar, as it pertains to jerking around interest rates, creating currency, funding the U.S. Treasury spending for fiscal policy, and it implements many other currency, monetary, the same thing. It implements other currency and monetary programs that exist in today's financial system. Monetary policy, like I said, is accomplished by the Federal Reserve and include such things as banking regulation, monitoring the banks, reserve cash requirements of the banks and financial institutions, and a myriad of other programs and edicts regulation that it uses to bend and twist the financial system of the world, hopefully in the direction they want it to go. Think of the differences between monetary and fiscal policy as a river and the things that feed off the river. The river is the monetary policy. It's the substance of everything that feeds off of it. Fiscal policy is the inhabitants around the river, okay? Monetary policy, initiated by the Federal Reserve, the river, keeps the whole thing going. It's a money system, it's lubricated, and it's functioning and made to function by making sure that the banking industry is sound and in good working order. This means supplying and monitoring the ebb and flow of cash and deposits, as well as supplying liquidity, which is cash, and supplying these things at any time it is needed for whatever the reason to keep the river flowing. The system is the river. They also do something of setting the overnight interest rates on funds the banks may need to borrow. Banks are big institutions, and they're constantly using funds and having too much funds, and they take funds out and put funds back in to a particular mechanism called the repurchase agreement market or repo market. But basically know that the way when they put money in and draw money out, there's this huge feeding and placement of funds, and it has to be necessary to lubricate the system and make sure that everything functions, even on a daily basis. The setting of the rates to take money out or put money back in is called the overnight discount rate. So the Federal Reserve sets this overnight discount rate so the financial system, the people in the financial industry, the big corporations, the big entities, the banks and all that, have a place to go to get money that they may need for overnight use. Much like our river analogy, the system, the river, obviously is vastly more critical than the inhabitants around the river and in the monetary system, that's you and me. It sounds harsh, but it is the way of the order of importance that is currently viewed, and one could argue they view it correctly so. After all, people could go broke. That won't crash the system, but the system crashes and everybody goes broke. So the river is more important than the inhabitants around it. So the monetary system is, could be argued, to be more important than the people that use it. After all, if some consumers go under, unfortunate as that may be, it would be far more critical should the entire system collapse. Now, I'm not saying I agree with the morals of it, but the premise is a sound one, financially speaking. The key point in all of this is that the monetary policy, which addresses the system, could be argued to be of a higher priority than the fiscal policy, which addresses all of us. It is likely the reason monetary policy, money, liquidity, feeding the banking system, is generally not subject to congressional oversight, at least like fiscal policy is. And subsequently, it's not delayed like monetary policy could be, like the stimulus checks. Monetary policy is also carried out by the Federal Reserve, and which is subject to some oversight. For the most part, it's autonomous from the political aisles of Washington. They want the Federal Reserve, and they fight the Federal Reserve to be autonomous from Congress. They don't want political wrangling in the monetary policy. Not so with fiscal policy. Fiscal policy are the programs that help the average Joe, like stimulus and unemployment programs. These are subject to congressional oversight, and hence the delays in such programs may be common, right? We are waiting all that time for another stimulus program, or another paycheck protection program. Whether the focus on monetary and fiscal policy importance versus one another is ideal, the fact that monetary policy is probably more important than fiscal policy, the fact that the system is more important than you and me, the question being, is the system more important than the people it serves? You could probably make a good argument that it is. For without a few people, the system still goes on. But without the system, nothing goes on. Moreover, since much of the financial system, which utilizes monetary programs, is comprised of the banking industry and large corporate entities, aka Wall Street, is it acceptable that those programs, for the most part, remain outside of the congressional oversight? And let me tell you, encompass many more trillions than what flows to Main Street? It's a good question to ask. We'll be right back with the last part of Money Matters. You're listening to Show 320, entitled Enter Biden. My name's Mark Lindbergh. Money! It's a gas. Welcome back to this edition of Money Matters, show number 320. My name's Mark Cuniverti. Show's entitled today, Enter Biden. So we have seen some pretty crazy moves in the stock market as of late. And one of the things that has been really crazy is, again, arise our friend Bitcoin, cyber currency as it is called. And I've always been fascinated by Bitcoin. Now, we have to realize, I thought when I first saw Bitcoin, you know, techies, computer geeks, I guess we could call them, but I call them techies because geek's really not a nice word. Techies are fascinated by computers, of course, and I don't see a lot of techies doing investing, at least before Bitcoin hit the market. When Bitcoin hit the market, it was something that techies could get all on board on, because it was cyber currency. I mean, it was a currency, an investment in a conduit that they understood all too well. unlike gold or stocks or anything like that, Bitcoin is like right up their alley. The allure about Bitcoin is that it is unmanipulable. I guess manipulatable. There we go. There's what I'm looking for. In other words, Bitcoin is basically a coin or a unit of measure that is arrived at by going through a long mathematical equation, from what I understand of it, blockchain technology. And every time you complete the equation, a coin is created. And every time a coin is created, the equation gets harder. So it is rather mind-twisting, even on mine, but that's kind of how it works. And so it's out in cyberspace, and it is available to anyone that has a computer that is allowed to go on the various conduits that carry the Bitcoin, I guess you could say, medium. So as Bitcoin started to get more and more popular, more and more people bought it, and you could buy it either through these little apps on your phone and things of this sort, and it was a couple of pennies a piece, and then it went up from there, and it ran all the way up to like 20,000 and then corrected, and then it went back up to where it is now, which is close to 38,000 a coin. Now, one of the things about characteristic of a currency, it has to be divisible. And Bitcoin is, I guess you could buy a Satoshi. A Satoshi is a portion of a Bitcoin, so you don't need to buy just one coin. If you can't afford the current price of it, which is $38,000, you could buy a Satoshi, and I think that's a piece of it. The combination for the mathematics for Bitcoin are stored, so I am told, on each computer that has a Bitcoin on it. So you can't really manipulate or destroy a Bitcoin. So if the government wanted to just go in and say, I want to destroy all Bitcoin, they can't really do that because of this this blockchain technology, where if you buy one, from what I understand, the mathematical equation is stored on everybody's computer. So it can't be wiped clean off the earth. I do understand, and that in a recent New York Times article, to get a Bitcoin account, it's kind of like a Swiss bank account. You got to have a password and a name and an email that goes with it or something like that. And the IRS, from what I told, is informed of all Bitcoin transactions. And there is a New York Times article out that, like I just mentioned, is that there are people that have lost their password, are basically locked out of their Bitcoin. They can't get back in. Now, the New York Times refers to people that have lost hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and millions. And the top attraction of this particular article was a guy that had $250 million in Bitcoin, and he has a 132-character password, and he can't remember it. And if he tries two more times and he enters it wrong, he is no longer in the account or can't get into it. And the Bitcoin isn't destroyed. It's theoretically still there. But no, he can't get into it. Now, I understand there's $140 billion worth of locked up Bitcoin that people can't get into because they lost their passwords. So can Bitcoin, you know, I've never bought a Bitcoin. I have bought a fund that represents Bitcoin, Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, it's called. But there you are, kind of out of the Bitcoin realm, when you're buying something in the stock market and you're off the computer analog and you're just buying another stock that supposedly holds Bitcoin. So is Bitcoin an investment? Is it a good investment? I would say that it's more, for me, in my opinion, a speculation. Because people say, well, it's going to be the next newest currency. Well, it can't be a currency without specific characteristics, and it is missing one. Very important characteristic. Currency must be recognizable, and it is. Currency must be divisible. In other words, you have to be able to have small pieces of it. Because if you have a $38,000 coin, you need a small portion of that to buy an orange. So there, hence the Satoshi. It has to be hard to get. And it, of course, Bitcoin is hard to mine through the mathematics of it. So it is hard to get. It has to be durable. In other words, it can't be an autumn leaf that falls apart in a week. And Bitcoin survives in cyberspace, so it is. And it has to be a store of value. And here's where I have a problem with it. Store of value means it must maintain its value against real things. So in other words, can Bitcoin maintain its value against a truckload of oranges? And here's the thing about Bitcoin. Bitcoin maintains a store of value when it goes up only in one direction, which is up. So the store of value, you could say, well, as long as it goes up, it maintains a store of value. Not really. For the guy that gives it up at $10,000 of Bitcoin, and then it runs to 38, basically the guy who bought the coin has made money. Therefore, if one part of the transaction has made money, the buyer, the seller, has lost it. It's hard to conceptualize how that is, but basically think of the fact that, you know, I took a Bitcoin for my apples, for a ton of apples, and now the Bitcoin has doubled in price, so now I could buy 2 ton of apples for the same Bitcoin. Now, imagine you are a person that needs apples, and you spent a Bitcoin for a truckload of apples. And then you said, I don't want these apples. I want to turn around and sell them back for a Bitcoin. But Bitcoin has doubled in value. So now you need 2 trucks of apples where you once got one. And so it doesn't maintain, it's got to maintain a store of value in both directions. That's very, very important. Both directions have to maintain a store of value. So, don't know where Bitcoin's going to go from here. I would call it right now a speculation. The rumors have it'll be $1 million a coin and blah, blah, blah. And in the world of investing, nothing is for sure and nothing is that easy. So, if you look at the chart of Bitcoin, it is parabolic. And we are taught in economics, straight lines up are bad. So, Bitcoin, is it for you? I don't know. At this time, maybe a little bit. I don't own any of it, but, you know, I can't fault people that have made money on it for sure. But for me, not quite yet, maybe. As a speculation, you know, and I'm a speculator, maybe. But okay, that concludes today's Money Matters. This has been show number 320, entitled Enter Biden. Remember, discussions in this show should not be regarded as investment advice. Consult a qualified investment advisor before making any important decisions. And do your own research before investing. Indices I may have mentioned today are not directly invested, possible to invest into directly. And are opinions that I've expressed on this show are my opinions only and may not represent those of this station as staff, management, or underwriters. Our website is moneymanagementradio.com, where everything is free. Our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. My name is Mark Cunaberti. I hold California insurance license OL34249 and am a Medicare approved agent. I want to wish you all a great day and a great week. And again, a happy new year. Thanks for listening.